From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. They were on their feet in the arena, in each other's faces, almost nose to nose, uncomfortably close to watch sometimes. But the stakes are high. President Obama needed a strong night. He got it. But Mitt Romney was not giving an inch. The president took the fight to his challenger.
Governor Romney says he's got a five-point plan. Governor Romney doesn't have a five-point plan. He has a one-point plan. And that plan is to make sure that folks at the top play by a different set of rules.
And Mitt Romney said, we just can't do this again.
I can tell you that if you were to elect President Obama, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get a repeat of the last 4 years. We just can't afford four more years like the last 4 years.
This hour on Point, flashpoints and footwork in the second presidential debate. You can join the conversation. What did you see up there last night? What did you hear that mattered to you? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll be joined in a minute by the Weekly Standard's John McCormick and Ruth Marcus of the Washington Post. But first, joining us from New York is Chris Matthews, host of MSNBC's Hardball. Chris Matthews was incredulous after the first debate, among the loudest critics of what was panned as an Obama no-show. Here he was October 3rd with Rachel Maddow and Ed Schultz.
Where was Obama tonight? He should watch... Well, not just Hardball, Rachel should watch you, and should watch the Reverend Al, should watch Lawrence. He would learn something about this debate. There's a hot debate going on in this country. You know where it's being held? Here, on this network, is where we're having the debate. We have our knives out. We go after the people and the facts. What was he doing tonight? He went in there disarmed.
Chris Matthews, author of Jack Kennedy, Elusive Hero. He was back for the town hall debate last night. He joins us now. Chris Matthews, welcome. What did you see last night, sir? Did the president hear your pain?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, it was pain because he didn't show up the first time. And when we go back over the record, apparently that is, except in the case of Bill Clinton, he is like all the other incumbent presidents who have faced these debates, lost the first one. Whether it's 4 years or so of listening to Hail to the Chief or being the only one in the room who can speak, they lose their cutting edge, their ability to take on a lack of deference on the part of their opponent. No one I've ever seen has taken on a president with a lack of deference like Mitt Romney. His arrogance, I mean, whether it's class or it's social or it's religious, whatever it's based on, his sense of superiority over the man in the White House is palpable. There's kind of a boardroom droit de seigneur. He walks in the room like, I own this room. I own moderator is probably a somewhat middle-level or lower-level employee of mine
yeah.
who I could dismiss almost physically by waving my arm like, nice try, Junior, but get back in your little seat there because you're just Bob Cratchit as far as I'm concerned.
So there's Romney, but what about the president the first time out? You were pulling your hair out, hair on fire, that he wasn't pushing back. Did he do enough last night?
A couple of things where I thought he still has the problem with the economy, which the other fellow, Romney, is able to keep pounding. But he did try. What I liked was the bite you just showed there, played the it's not a five-point plan, it's a one-point plan. That showed me the ability to craft the moment and to basically make statements of power, to be able to just say something of a declaration, if you will, and to set up that predication. We just say, this is the fact. You are basically running on a campaign of lowering tax rates, especially for those who pay a lot of taxes, where it matters to people most. And I think that was really what he said with power, and I really like that. I love the ninth inning, the bottom of the ninth, response to the 100%. Whoever told Mr. Romney to say 100% in the top of the ninth?
Talk about a setup.
Pardon me?
Talk about a setup for Obama's reply.
It's almost like if people questioned it, saying, you know what, one of my boss, I should say, said, well, though, on one of the other networks, the numbers went down, that little joystick went down. And I said, yeah, but that's because the Romney people hated it so much that he went right to that painful moment of him being caught talking down to half the country as victims and people he doesn't care about.
Hey, Chris, I want to get to the bottom line on this thing. I'm still not sure where the needle really stands after this, but what the issues here, but what about the body language? I mean, you talk about Mitt Romney's, but I don't think I've ever seen a presidential debate, a town hall meeting or otherwise, where there was so much circling and almost chest bumping. I mean, Alessandra Stanley in The Times says, like tomcats in an alley, a dance of dominance.
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I've been developing such an attitude about Romney's arrogance and physical arrogance where he talks down to people like Jim Lehrer and just dismisses them and tried to do it with Candy Crowley last night. I am not sure, but I'll bet her willingness to step in there and referee the fact on the Libyan statement the day after the tragedy over there in Benghazi. Her willingness to speak up and knowing the fact, presenting it, was risky because had she been wrong on the fact, she would have been in trouble professionally. But the fact that even though knowing she was right, step out of the role of what's called today objective journalism, which I call parade coverage. It's not objective journalism. It's people that let us go into war without ever offering a critical notion of what's really going on here. Or when people engage in race baiting and they act like they don't hear it when history shows they should hear it. And so what's called objective journalism is also is really just parade coverage. This is happening, that's happening, without any critical, you know, explanation of it or historic explanation. She did it. She said, this happened.
But Chris, what wasn't that a
I think partially she must have said, look, I'm not a potted plant, to use Brendan Sullivan's line. I am not sitting here playing timekeeper. I'm going to inflict some critical journalism here at this point.
But wasn't that a technical win for the president? I mean, he said the word terror, but he scarcely said what we saw in Benghazi yesterday was an act of terror. And wasn't Romney right that his people were characterizing it as something quite different, a protest that got violent for a long time after that day?
On that point, on the point of fact historically, the New York Times yesterday, and the president didn't pick up on this. I don't know if he practiced debating yesterday in the morning, because he should have had the New York Times report. When it happened, they were interviewing the Times reporters on the scene, were interviewing the participants in that combination, they called it, of a local, of Al-Qaeda in North Africa, which is a local group acting in response to the Los Angeles video. It wasn't just saying, it wasn't an act of terror separate from what happened. It was an act of terrorism combined with a protest against what had been. So it's a very messy thing. And the fact that they're having a problem untangling this between terrorism, meaning a group of people that go out and want to mark 9/11 and kill some Americans in a dramatic way, it was also, according to the participants themselves on the day of, talking to the Times reporter, an act of reaction to that L.A. video. So this is murky.
A lot of guys with guns, though, streaming straight in there in the video show that. Look, it seemed to me that Mitt Romney held his own, though, pretty well. I mean, the president showed up. He didn't show up the first time. But Romney still had a full presence on that stage. And as you say, on the economy, you know, it's tough to sit there and listen to him go through the roll of bad numbers, and you can argue about why they're there and who's responsible, but still, that's tough for a sitting president to take, isn't it?
I agree. I think it's going to be a very difficult election day. I think that the president may have the ability of... I don't know if you remember this. I'm pretty old. I remember things. I have a great memory for the past.
Yeah.
And The great boxing, three boxing matches, heavyweight champion boxing match between Floyd Patterson and a Swedish boxer, Ingemar Johansson. Ingemar Johansson was a Swedish boxer who had one punch, his Sunday punch. It was called his Thunder and Lightning, he called it.
Yeah.
He could really punch once, and he knocked out Floyd Patterson in the first fight. Now, Patterson was a much better boxer. But, you know, I think that, and I'm not doing this ethnically, it just strikes me this way, that Romney, as you say, does have that Sunday punch. Every time he says this economy is not what it should be, he wins.
Yeah.
He wins in that moment. If that's his punch, and the other fellow, the president, is likable, he can smile well, and he can move around in that ring, and he can say a lot of things, but he can't really deal with that punch. And yet, and even last night, I thought, where was his future? When is the president going to lay out where what he's been doing leads to a brighter future? He can't just say a new set of promises. That'll be laughable. But he has to say what he's been doing in terms of the stimulus, saving the auto industry, healthcare. Everything has to add up to some brighter future, or else why would you give...
Isn't it getting kind of late for that description? Because he's pretty broad about it. He doesn't have a lot to say.
Better now than never. And I do think it's a question why he hasn't done it. Why hasn't he said, you know what, I do believe in Keynesian economics. I don't believe in the austerity policies of Merkel and the people in Europe and Cameron. I do believe that there's two ways to go, fiscal stimulus or austerity. I think I've gone in the right direction, relatively.
But we've had a lot of that. People say maybe there wasn't enough. You can argue that. But when Mitt Romney says, if you elect this man, it's going to be more of the same. What's the president offering that will help people say, oh, no, it's not. It's going to be much better. I mean, why will people think that?
Well, because let me tell you the great irony here, Tom, and I think I hear this from a lot of people, and maybe it's just a sense that the business cycle does turn, that we're approaching what could well be a fall in which things do turn out. The real estate people are telling us that the numbers are really there now, that the market's going to turn, the real estate market's going to solve its problem, finally. You hear indications of this week, in fact, of or last week, actually, of lower, much lower unemployment claims coming in now. Real ones, not just the monthly, but the regular weekly stuff. And so there is a sense. This happened with poor George Bush, the senior Bush,
yeah,
where his economy turned the fourth quarter. It happened with Bill Clinton positively. His fourth quarter of 2000 began the downturn. I mean, Bill Clinton was magically fortunate. But, I mean, this could be, just like it was with Bush Sr., a turn that comes just a little bit too late or just in time.
Chris, we got half a minute. Let me ask you, in your gut, do you think the president has the fire in his belly for a second term? The first time out there in that Denver debate, that was a huge question mark. Can one debate inform the public that after all this tough 4 years, he's got the stuff, the determination, the will to make it, to make a go of it?
The question was answered negatively when he gave a speech that wasn't brilliant in Charlotte. Bill Clinton's was brilliant. Bill Clinton has picked up this guy, picked up his pace. I mean, he's picked up the spirit, the banner, if you will, that was on the field. He picked it up. Now the president grabbed the banner again last night, and he's going to have to carry it with enthusiasm, and he has to decide on three options. Am I going to run a populist campaign a la Harry Truman on the 47% and stick to it, darn it? Stick to one thing. This guy's for the rich, and stick to it right to the election day.
Yeah.
Score. Or does he try to rebuild support for what he's doing economically? You know, I think, I forget the third option right now, but there were three in my head. I thought, but he has to decide on what he's going to say the last 2 or 3 weeks and stick to it.
Chris, it's great to have you with us. Terrific. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Obama, Romney, round two. Last night, the second presidential debate. Mitt Romney saying several times during the debate last night that middle-class Americans have suffered under the past 4 years of the Obama administration.
You've seen, as middle-income people in this country, incomes go down $4,300 a family, even as gasoline prices have gone up $2,000. Health insurance premiums up $2,500. Food prices up. Utility prices up. The middle-income families in America have been crushed over the last 4 years.
First question out of that town hall audience, a young man standing up saying, how am I going to get a job when I get out of college? Mitt Romney.
I know what it takes to create good jobs again. I know what it takes to make sure that you have the kind of opportunity you deserve. And kids across this country are going to recognize we're bringing back an economy. It's not going to be like the last 4 years.
Big tax plan at the heart of that. Mitt Romney was hit hard by the president for not offering specifics on that plan.
We haven't heard from the governor any specifics beyond Big Bird and eliminating funding for Planned Parenthood in terms of how he pays for that. Now, Governor Romney was a very successful investor. If somebody came to you, Governor, with a plan that said, here, I want to spend $7 or $8 trillion, and then we're going to pay for it, but we can't tell you until maybe after the election how we're going to do it, you wouldn't have taken such a sketchy deal, and neither should you, the American people.
Sketchy deal. There's an echo. Joining us now from Hempstead, New York, where Hofstra was, where the town hall meeting was last night. John McCormick, staff writer at the Weekly Standard. He was there for the debate last night. John McCormick, welcome back. Great to have you here.
Hi, great to be here.
From Bethesda, Maryland, Ruth Marcus is with us, editorial writer, columnist at the Washington Post. Ruth Marcus, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty is here. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Hello, Tom, Ruth, and John.
John McCormick, let's come to you. Weekly Standard conservative cheering after the first debate. You heard Chris Matthews howling then and not howling so loudly now. What did you think of the debate last night, John?
I'd point to a draw, and that's actually what a few of the polls showed last night. And I say a draw not just because the polls showed that, but I do think that Mitt Romney definitely was a little bit worse than his first performance, and Barack Obama was a lot better. He was a lot more energetic in attacking Mitt Romney, but I don't think he really had that forward-looking vision that even you and Chris Matthews were talking about his second-term agenda and what he'd actually do in the next 4 years.
CBS poll of uncommitted voters right after the debate, 37% said the president won, but 30% said Romney won, 33% called it a tie. What about the body language on that, in that arena? I guess it's not a stage, John, but in that arena, I mean, that was a lot of prowling around and almost, I mean, people get sick of sports metaphors, but it almost wasn't a metaphor. This was like boxers circling.
Yeah, I didn't like it, and I don't think it helped either candidate. I think it might have even hurt Mitt Romney a little bit more than Barack Obama to engage in such bickering. I thought they just both came across as somewhat petulant, and I would have, if I had been advising Mitt Romney, if I had been prepping him for debate, I would have said try and play it a little bit above the fray, try and go for a little bit aloof like Paul Ryan did last week when, you know, Joe Biden was scoffing at him, and obviously the president wasn't that bad or anything like Joe Biden last week, but I did think that just the way that they were both squabbling about, oh, well, whose time is it, whose turn is it, how much time do I get, I thought that just didn't really work well for either man, and I think that it might have hurt Mitt Romney a little more because somehow he comes across as a little bit whinier than the president.
Ruth Marcus, we have learned that it all matters, the body language and whatever, details and high ideals, it all matters. What about just the body language theater of what we saw there last night? Alessandra Stanley in the Times called it a dance of dominance. Ruth, how'd that work out?
Well, dancing with the dominant stars, I guess. I'm a little nervous because I think I agreed with just about everything that John had to say. And the CBS poll sounded intuitively right to me also. I think that one of the things that was interesting about the dance of dominance is that you do have to be very careful if you're Governor Romney to know that you're dealing with a president. And I think to the extent that there was really, at times, I thought, a question about whether he crossed the line of lack of deference and lack of respect. And
almost
a little bit
insolent.
Of petulance
insolent, almost.
To the president. You know, have you looked at your pension or read, you know, the back and forth about the Libya transcript. Mm-hmm. And I think I would say one other thing on that, which is, who's the audience that the two candidates are speaking to now? In terms of undecided voters, more of those undecided voters are women, and you could watch it on the dials last night. The bickering, as you say, women, and especially us moms, have slightly low tolerance for bickering. Maybe we hear a little too much of it at home. And I think that that both of the candidates marked themselves down a little bit when they got into that mosh pit of bickering, and that because I think there was a little bit more of that and it was a little bit more problematic from Governor Romney, that may be a particular problem with women, and we can get into this a little bit more. You could see each of them, not in the bickering part, but in the substantive discussion, making their clear pitch to women.
Jack, some constraint, I guess, on a challenger, as Ruth says, how far can you go with the president of the United States? On the other hand, if you're the president, you've got to be dignified. In the first debate, the president seemed almost weighed down, almost sunk by that. What about the way each of them handled that last night, Jack, as they physically confronted one another on the stage?
Well, Joe Scarborough, former Republican congressman and host of Morning Joe, made a point that, yes, Governor Romney tried to run over the president, but from Joe Scarborough's point of view, worse, he tried to run over Candy Crowley. And he said that's always bad when a male politician drowns out a female moderator. That just doesn't work. Now, he says that as somebody who is alive to these kinds of things. So he felt, from his, I think, objective point of view, that hurt Governor Romney. But, you know, you mentioned that poll, Tom. Yes, CBS showed in the instant poll.
Pretty much a draw. But, I mean, Obama ahead, but a whole lot of people saying it's a tie. And
but it was no draw when it comes to the economy. Romney way ahead in one poll by 30 points. Who would do better on the economy? That's just really damaging for the president.
What about the president's replies on the economy, Ruth? I mean, Romney laying out again and again the litany of how bad it's been. Interestingly, I don't think the president went back too much to say, yes, but I inherited this. What about his reply?
Well, he did go back a few times to talk about how we were on the verge of another Great Depression when he took office. I think that's getting a little bit old with people. This is clearly Governor Romney's strongest argument, that the president tried to do a good job, he failed, it's time for a change, the next 4 years are going to be like the last 4 years if we give President Obama a second term. And I think President Obama's two strongest points were that sketchy deal line, which I thought was terrific and accurate, actually, about no rational businessman would launch a plan without understanding both ends of the balance sheet. And also the, I thought, fantastic question from the audience member about how Governor Romney would be different from George W. Bush. And the president, you could see Governor Romney having a little bit of a hard time with that question, and the president just both tying Governor Romney to Bush economics and then making the social policy distinctions on everything from immigration to defunding Planned Parenthood that made George W. Bush look like a complete squishy moderate.
We've got that town hall moment here where Susan Katz asked that question here. Not too excited about the president's performance or years either, she said, and then put it to Mitt Romney. Here she is.
I am an undecided voter because I'm disappointed with the lack of progress I've seen in the last 4 years. However, I do attribute much of America's economic and international problems to the failings and missteps of the Bush administration. Since both you and President Bush are Republicans, I fear a return to the policies of those years should you win this election. What is the biggest difference between you and George W. Bush?
Well, Mitt Romney had a lot to say about that. Here's a piece of it saying, well, he would balance the budget, said the governor.
I'm going to get us to a balanced budget. President Bush didn't. President Obama was right. He said that that was outrageous to have deficits as high as $500 billion under the Bush years. He was right. But then he put in place deficits twice that size for every one of his 4 years.
And President Obama coming in then to say, well, okay, but Romney, how will he get it done? And he's more socially conservative than President Bush.
George Bush never suggested that we eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood. So there are differences between Governor Romney and George Bush, but they're not on economic policy. In some ways, he's gone to a more extreme place when it comes to social policy.
John McCormick, that question, though it started with a zing for the president's term of office and how disappointed this attendee was, turned around to ask the question that was kind of like an Obama question. Obama often says, you know, we can't go back. We mustn't go back. What did you think of Romney's reply on that question, John?
Well, you picked out the strongest part, which I think is the deficit, and I think that is the strongest issue. It's very interesting that you actually, that earlier clip, you hear President Obama say, oh, well, you know, he's only pointed out Big Bird and these small things that he wants to cut. He's gone with that approach, saying, well, Mitt Romney's really not saying what he's going to cut, rather than the Bill Clinton approach, which is that Mitt Romney, you know, what he said.
Going to cut everything.
Yeah, he's going to slash Medicaid. This is going to hurt people in nursing homes. I mean, I'm not sure which attack is more effective. I would actually think that the he's going to slash everything to pieces would be a more effective attack. But it's interesting that the president went with the, you know, he's not even serious about the deficit, because I think the deficit is a big issue. I think it's a huge issue. That's what all these, you know, that's what pro voters were about. I think that this is a real opportunity for him. I think the president did get, I would just correct him a bit on that Planned Parenthood issue. The President Bush did defund international Planned Parenthood. And Ronald Reagan also took Title X money, which is contraceptive funding, and denied that to organizations like Planned Parenthood that are that perform abortions. So I guess President Bush didn't get around to that domestically, but I do think that he opposed that. So
but John, what about if the president, you know, has to endure Romney's recitation of the economic woes of the last 4 years, and they are very rough to listen to? What about when the president says, look, there's a net loss of revenues to the government in his tax cuts of $5 trillion, then there's $2 trillion that the Pentagon doesn't want, but he's going to give it, so there's $7, and then there's another trillion, I forget where, $8 trillion. What about that hole in the road when the governor very deliberately doesn't want to lay out the deductions he wants to get rid of because, sure, it's a swamp, what politician wants to get into that? On the other hand, here's the president saying, you know, you as a businessman, Governor Romney, would never buy a deal like that. What about that, John?
Well, you know, I think it's not that bad for someone to just lay out a broad framework for tax policy. I think that what Mitt Romney has done on income tax reform is exactly the same thing almost as what President Obama has done for corporate tax reform. President Obama proposes that we should lower the corporate tax rate by 20%. We should cut it from 35% to 28%. That's a $1.3 trillion cut, according to the Brookings Institution. Now, how does he pay for that? Well, he lists a few things. They get about 10% of the way there. He's also counting those towards deficit reduction, so he's double counting them. So how does he pay for the other $1.1 trillion? That's a question that Romney hasn't put to him. Maybe it's too much in the weeds and people don't care about corporate tax as much as individual taxes. But again, President Obama's been president for 4 years. He just introduced this corporate tax plan in 2012, and he says it's going to create jobs. I think, you know, the question I'd be asking if I were Mitt Romney, why didn't you bring this plan up in 2009? And furthermore, your plan for raising income taxes on people making more than $250,000 and small businesses making more than $250,000, that's exactly what you ran on 4 years ago. Why is it going to be any different in the next 4 years? If you couldn't pass this the first time around, why are the next 4 years going to be better, especially the fact that you're not going to have a huge Democratic majorities in both houses like you did the first 2 years?
Everybody's got their big, tough questions. How's it going to be different? A big one from Romney. $8 trillion hole in the road, a big one from Obama. We're looking at last night's debate. Let's go to Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. You know, I was listening to one of your panelists a minute ago, and I have to say I take quite offense when I hear anyone say that President Obama shouldn't, that it's getting old to bring up what he inherited. And I couldn't disagree more, because as a small business owner, I remember, and as an American citizen, I remember how horrible the second half of 2008 was. And to say that, oh, that's getting old. No, we lost 800,000 jobs a month. He can't say that enough. We cannot allow Republicans with the same economic plans to get back in control of the reins.
Carl, flip it over then. How will it be different in a second Obama administration if that should come to pass? What about that Romney question?
I would take gaining 150,000 jobs a month over losing 700,000 jobs a month any day. I think that the plans that he has implemented are starting to work and have been working. When we gain 5 million jobs, that's better than losing 9 million any day. And I think that the president was very forceful in pointing out inaccuracies from Governor Romney, and I think that he was most presidential when he turned at him and looked him in the eye and took up for his team and said that he was, that if he found it offensive that he would use something like Libya as a political football, when that's not what the president and commander-in-chief does. So
Carl, we've got it. Forgive me, we're up against a break here. Jack, I want to come to that Benghazi issue, because I'm not so sure that it wasn't used in a political way. We'll look at that. But, you know, but Carl says, come on, I'd rather – Carl should be a speechwriter here. Yeah. Rather have gain 150,000 a month than lose 700,000, 800,000. But still, that sort of what's going to be different versus we don't want to go back. Where's the traction? What's got more tang there, Jack?
Well, you know, before the convention, a leading Democrat talked to the people in the White House and said, give us a big new idea in the speech. They said, we'll do it. Stay tuned. It didn't come. We didn't hear it last night. There's no vision for that second term. There's no big new idea. And so what we have is the status quo.
What about a serious president who says, look, here is the vision. We're going to steadily, determinedly invest. We're going to educate people. We're going to get, you know, step by step, put this back on the tracks. That's kind of what the president's saying. It's not more sexy than that, but maybe that's real, Jack.
Yes, it is. It's 5 yards in a cloud of dust, yeah. And Governor Romney is saying, oh, no, we're going to throw a long pass, and it's all going to be sweetness and light. Well, we'll have to see.
Ruth, Americans like sweetness and light, and long passes can sound pretty good when you're deep in the wrong side of the field.
This is a little bit too much sports metaphor.
Sorry.
For me, but since Carl, I was the one who had the comment that Carl bridled at,
yeah.
I just want to say that the question is, and he made a very good point, he should be a speechwriter, as you say, but the question is whether people's patience is running thin in terms of the time it has taken to get this recovery underway, and I think that is the hardest question for the president to answer.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking Obama, Romney, round two last night, the second presidential debate, and what we saw, what we learned in that town hall. Ruth Marcus is with us from The Washington Post. John McCormick from The Weekly Standard is here. And our own Jack Beatty. Jack, John, Ruth, lots of comments online here. Judy says, hands down, the president won. Romney proved himself a bullying CEO who can't handle dissension, even when confronted with the truth. There's a new version of you can't handle the truth. But here, Talk says, Romney was insolent, according to the left, of course. But when Biden snapped at Raddatz and mocked Ryan, it was just Joe being Joe. The liberals went wild with approval. And by the way, all that guff thrown at W back in 2004 was called truth to power. You know, Jack, it is a hardball game, Jack. We got to get off this sports stuff. Sweetness and light, I think, was your phrase. But you know, you can read body language all kinds of ways, depending where you sit and where your sympathies are, Jack.
Absolutely. And I watched a couple of these undecided voters focus group meetings this morning, you know, that they had on, and voters were offended by that. They went right past the content to this body language, to the tone, and they seemed to weight it pretty much equally, that each candidate offended them by displaying manners and a deportment inconsistent with the office they hold or the aspiration they have. And of course, people felt that very strongly about the Biden debate as well. We wish these people could behave in a more dignified way, but politics ain't beanbag, and a lot is at stake.
Let's go to that exchange over Benghazi. The third and last debate is going to be foreign policy. We probably have not heard the end of this, but there was the moment where Mitt Romney looked to corner the president on his handling of the attacks on the American consulate in Benghazi last month, resulted in the death of Ambassador Chris Stevens and three other Americans. Romney claimed that the president waited days to describe the incident as a terrorist attack. Obama challenged that assertion. And then there was that moment when moderator Candy Crowley jumped in.
I want to make sure we get that for the record, because it took the president 14 days before he called the attack in Benghazi an act of terror.
Get the transcript.
He did, in fact, sir. So let me call it an act of terror.
Can you say that a little louder, Candy?
He did call it an act of terror. It did as well take 2 weeks or so for the whole idea of there being a riot out there about this tape to come out.
There's the exchange. I think the president felt some wind in his sails from that, and then stepped up, as our caller from Nashville said, very sternly, with this sharp response to the allegation that he was playing politics with the attack.
The suggestion that anybody in my team, whether the Secretary of State, our UN ambassador, anybody on my team would play politics or mislead when we've lost four of our own, Governor, is offensive. That's not what we do. That's not what I do as president. That's not what I do as commander-in-chief.
Ruth Marcus, I was trying to take that on board and figure out how to absorb it. I mean, you know the president, any president, every president feels when people in his government, in his service, die. That's rough. On the other hand, when I think back to those comments, the vivid kind of description of the UN Secretary, Ambassador Susan Rice, of this protest that then got violent, I remember at the time thinking this felt like kind of a political representation of what was going on, sort of downplay it because the election's coming. And was the president's high dudgeon there justified, Ruth?
Well, I think that it was justified to the extent that he has felt from the start that Governor Romney's reaction to the events in both Libya and Egypt was jumping in prematurely, accusing the administration unfairly, from my point of view, of sympathizing with the attackers rather than being outraged about the attack on the embassies and consulates. But I think that there's maybe a broader point to make here, which is, these are two men who do not like each other, and that came out in it was abundant display last night. They hold each other in minimum high regard. Mitt Romney looks at President Obama and sees a guy who's never managed a business, never been in what the governor likes to call the real economy. President Obama looks at Mitt Romney and sees a shape-shifting plutocrat who will say anything to get the job and who really doesn't believe in anything that he's saying. And I think that sense of dismissiveness and contempt on both sides was just so evident, both in the Libya exchange and at other moments last night.
We'll look at that disdain, John. What about the president saying, you know, with a kind of a quiet pride there, but that he was making a lot of, that he'd called it terror on that first day after the incident. But when you read back, yes, in a broad interpretation it was, but Candy Crowley's call on that was a little generous to the president. It's not as though he said that was terror last night in Benghazi.
It was a little generous, and she later even kind of drove that point home and said that. In the main, Romney was correct, and the point she was trying to get to is that the president didn't actually describe it as a pre-planned terrorist attack as opposed to spontaneous mob violence, an act of terror that occurred there. We had Democrats and Republicans on Capitol Hill who said intelligence knew within 24 hours that this was a pre-planned terrorist attack, that it wasn't about a video, that it wasn't a spontaneous uprising. So the question is, why did the administration continue to insist for 2 weeks that this was some sort of spontaneous mob violence? I think you could answer that if the administration could say, our intelligence briefing did not tell us until, 13 days later that this had nothing to do with the videos. But that would raise the question of why people on Capitol Hill were getting different intelligence from the president. I mean, it's certainly possible. It just doesn't seem to make sense. So I just think there are a lot of questions right there. And as a matter of political theater, debate theater, I think the president may have been effective in sort of saying, how dare you suggest that we politicize this. But the facts do point to some sort of politicization. I'm not sure where in the administration that first occurred, but that's just what the facts seem to point to.
Mary in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, what I wanted to say was I thought Obama could have turned the thing completely on its ear last night when Mitt Romney said, have you checked your retirement portfolio lately? He should have turned to him and said, yes, I have, and isn't it doing a whole lot better than it was when I took office?
Everybody's a speechwriter here, but I get your point. Not a bad one.
When he took office.
What about overall, Mary? Did the president make up enough ground, given the drubbing he was widely seen as having taken in the first debate? Or has Romney still kind of got the upper hand here?
Oh, I don't think he has the upper hand. He particularly does not have it with women. His bullying of Candy Crowley last night and just the arrogant way he even said her name like she was some coffee office staff fetcher for him.
Well, her parents did name her Candy. Sorry.
Right. Nobody introduced her as Candy.
Well, okay.
He was the first one to call her Candy.
Well, it's her name.
But they did introduce her last night as Candace.
Okay. Her TV name, but point taken. Mitt Romney with his binder full of women. Let's listen to that pension exchange, though, first. That was kind of a funny, odd moment here. Mitt Romney accusing the president of also having pension money in firms abroad and no doubt Chinese firms.
Any investments I have over the last 8 years have been managed by a blind trust, and I understand they do include investments outside the United States, including in Chinese companies. Mr. President, have you looked at your pension? Have you looked at your pension?
I've got to say.
Mr. President, have you looked at your pension?
I don't look at my pension. It's not as big as yours, so it doesn't
Let me give you some advice.
I don't check it that often.
The back and forth of two guys, neither of them exactly paupers. Ruth Marcus, what about the point on women? There was a lot of attention to this issue. The candidates returned to it again and again. They paid special attention to women who asked questions in the audience last night. You got a lot of time. Who do you think came out ahead in wooing that half the sky, as they say?
Well, I think the president starts with an advantage. We can have a debate based on the recent polls about how big it is, but he does start with at least a slight advantage among women, and you could see him at multiple points trying to drive it home last night. I think he was given an absolute gift by the questioner. I think it was the first woman questioner, a young woman who asked early on about what both candidates would do on pay equity. That was where we got Governor Romney's binder full of women line. He spoke very eloquently about wanting to hire women and about flexibility in the workplace, which I think is very important. But he never answered the question about pay equity and really was not pressed by the president, which I thought was a little bit of a surprise about what his position would be actually on the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act. But you could see at point after point, both of them trying to appeal to or make up ground with women. At one point, Governor Romney said, I want to make sure that women have access to contraception. It was not an accident that the president, in addition to citing Big Bird, cited Planned Parenthood, which is very popular among and has been used by many women across the socioeconomic spectrum, that he cited Planned Parenthood as one of the specifics that Governor Romney wanted to defund.
Of course, access to contraception different from coverage of contraception. Alyssa in Waterloo, Iowa. Alyssa, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
Very well. What do you think?
Well, I was listening last night. I am a college-age student here. I go to UNI.
Great.
And I was listening to him talk about his, whole equal rights with women and the women in the workforce. And I thought it was very disappointing, his answer. Romney was talking about how he had that comment about how he actually went out and actively searched for women in his business so that he could have that interview. But
yep.
he stands on equal rights for healthcare. It's just disappointing to me. It's just very inconsistent, his views on, equal rights. Well, what about contraception? What about our rights as a human? It just doesn't make any sense to me.
So you weren't buying it last night as you listened from Waterloo, Iowa, Alyssa, and we hear it. And I appreciate your call right there. Let me get one more from Fort Dodge, Iowa. Thank you, Alyssa. Jim, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm looking at something, and it really bothers me, and that is that, Romney's comment about if we vote for Obama, we're going to get four more years of the same thing. It almost sounds to me like a promise, or even worse, like a threat. And the reason I'm looking at it that way is, for 4 years, people need to realize that neither of these candidates do things on their own. They say, I will do this, I will do that.
Yep.
But what really happens is they have to put things through Congress, okay?
Yep.
And for 4 years, we have watched Obama try to move his programs, the things he'd like to accomplish, the things he'd like to see America do. He's tried to get those things put forward through a Republican, basically a frustration, an obfuscation of every single thing that Obama has tried to do.
Jim, I think we've got it. Let us look at that. Jim, thanks for your call on that. I mean, there is this kind of hostage threat feeling there sometimes, Jack, like, look, there's the Congress and there's the president and they're not going to let him do what he wants. So you've got to vote for me because they've got President Obama in a headlock and it's not going anywhere, Jack.
Well, I think that is one of the implicit issues of the election. I mean, the House Republicans will not fix the Capitol dome. It's leaking. And that's a paradigm of the whole situation. They may not leave the lights on under Obama. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? And I think Mitt Romney can say, well, look, if you want government just to function, get that Capitol dome fixed, put the lights on.
Untie the lass on the tracks.
Yes. They'll do it for me. They won't do it for him. There's something to that.
Brooke in Chicago. Thanks for calling, Brooke. You're on the air.
Thank you. Yes, concerning the Obama health care plan, I am thoroughly opposed to that. The American people don't need more government policy shoved down our throat. We are an intelligent people. Let us make the choice. Let the people decide if they want to be a part of that program or not. Those that do, fine. They sign up. They're a part of it.
So it sounds like you're going to run with Romney. Do you think he held his own last night, Brooke?
I do. And the other thing is it seems like every time President Obama is in front of a microphone, the man is yelling. It's a microphone. He doesn't need to make himself sound like he's yelling at the public.
Brooke, we've got it. I want to hear just a little more from each of them. Here was Mitt Romney. Said he wanted to get the country back on track again and laid out the reasons why.
We don't have to settle for gasoline at $4. We don't have to settle for unemployment at a chronically high level. We don't have to settle for 47 million people on food stamps. We don't have to settle for 50% of kids coming out of college not able to get work. We don't have to settle for 23 million people struggling to find a good job. If I become president, I'll get America working again. I will get us on track to a balanced budget. The president hasn't. I will.
He will, and you can buy it or not. But that's a big argument that he's making there. The president, both of them asked, "What's the big misconception about you?" Here was President Obama.
I believe that the free enterprise system is the greatest engine of prosperity the world's ever known. I believe in self-reliance and individual initiative and risk takers being rewarded. But I also believe that everybody should have a fair shot, and everybody should do their fair share, and everybody should play by the same rules, because that's how our economy has grown. That's how we built the world's greatest middle class.
John McCormick, is this thing still a toss-up?
I think so. I think that this has been a closer race than we've all realized all along, and that the last debate really did shift the dynamic, and I don't think that this past debate had anything near the kind of effect that the first debate did on the race.
Ruth, what do you think might tip it? We've just got 2.5 weeks practically now.
I think that the equilibrium is back in a little bit more balance than the way John sees it, but I don't think we're at the point where nothing much external really is going to tip things. It's not going to be a jobs report that's going to have a big impact. I don't think the foreign policy debate is apt to have a huge impact. At this point, it's turnout, ground game, last-minute pitches, and a race that really, I think, was always going to be close that is probably going to stay that way.
And an argument right to the end with Americans, Jack, finally kind of left to think about this, those two visions they laid out last night.
And starkly and with spirit and, as you say, almost chest bumping.
Almost chest bumping. New terrain right there at the town hall meeting at Hofstra. Wow, it was something to see. John McCormick with the Weekly Standard, thank you for joining us today, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Ruth Marcus, thank you, madam.
Thanks, Tom.
And Jack Beatty, thanks as always.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.